Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, October 26, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by the Epson Workforce Pro, the world's fastest two-sided printer engineered for productivity. The Epson Workforce Pro, check it out at Epson.com. And by Slingbox, which just turned your iPad into a television. Slingbox has an iPad app, so now you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. Check it out at Best Buy or Slingbox.com/TWiT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us today from Nokia World, Simon Dingle's calling into the show. Welcome, Simon.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Good to have you on the show. Thanks for sharing your Nokia World experience with us.
Yeah.
Were you at Stephen Elop announcement?
I was. I was at the keynote this morning, and I have to say, it was unlike any other keynote I've ever attended. But it was interesting. Stephen Elop kicked it off talking about 25-year-olds all over the world and what they needed from their mobile devices. Bit of a different approach, but kind of came together in the end.
The important 25-year-old demographic. Well, C-Ray was announced, became official. The Nokia Lumia 800 is the name of C-Ray. It'll be available for €420, unsubsidized. Comes with a single-core 1.4 gigahertz Snapdragon processor, 16 gigs internal, 800 by 480, 3.7-inch AMOLED screen, a Zeiss lens, runs Mango, all the stuff you'd expect, 8-megapixel camera, HSDPA. But the differentiating factors on it are that it will come with a free 25-gigabyte SkyDrive account from Microsoft. So there's your Microsoft connection, an app called Nokia Drive, which is turn-by-turn navigation, Mix Radio, which is streaming music that you don't need to subscribe or even log into to use, and an ESPN Sports Hub app. Simon, did you get to play with any of this stuff?
Yeah, I got to take a look at the Lumia devices, the 710 as well. And the 710 is a remarkable device. It's essentially running the same platform as the 800, but at a far lower price point. They don't seem to have, you know, cut back too much on the 710. It looks like a great device. Stephen Elop made the claim that these were the first real Windows phones. Microsoft getting a lot of mileage out of the announcement today. But yeah. Looking pretty good. If you played with the N9, the hardware won't be that new to you. We've seen this before. It doesn't have a front-facing camera like the N9, and its innards are different. But, shape and form and the screen, it's pretty much the same deal.
Yeah, the 710 is only €270, so that's about $375 US. And its difference is an 8-gigabyte internal instead of a 16 gig, and a 5-megapixel camera instead of an 8-megapixel camera. And did you see the swappable rear covers? You can change the back.
It's like old school Nokia. I remember my old feature phone used to have that.
Are you trying to sell us on this, or are you really excited about this, Tom?
No, I'm not excited about this at all. It's a reaction formation. I'm trying to hide the fact that these didn't really get me going.
Is it because of all the leaks, or because these themselves are just not that exciting compared to all the other offerings out there? There doesn't seem to be anything that makes these things from Nokia stand out apart from the services that are involved versus the hardware. The hardware should be something really different, but it's stuff we've seen already.
Well, no front-facing camera. Doesn't that seem odd considering that Microsoft bought Skype, and wouldn't that just be a no-brainer?
Mary Jo Foley asked Nokia representatives that, and she wrote that they told her there wasn't enough time to add it to the handsets. And I think you're seeing some cracks in this plan here, because Nokia really isn't ready to put Windows phones out till next year, but Elop sort of forced them to march one out before the end of the year. And so this is what we get. We get the C-Ray. We get the N9, essentially, with Windows Phone on it instead. And then we get the 710. Now, I don't know if anybody knows if the 710 is a take on another piece of hardware. I'm not aware if it is. But they're for two different markets. The Lumia 800 will be coming to UK, France, Spain, Germany, Italy, and the Netherlands starting in November. They didn't give an actual date, but they said sometime in November. Probably not coming to the U.S. would be my guess. All they would say as far as the U.S. was a portfolio of products is coming to the U.S. in early 2012 and to China in the first half of 2012, and they will have CDMA and LTE. But we already knew that. We already knew they're bringing Windows phones to those countries later this year. Did it get you excited, Simon?
Well, you know, the Lumia devices didn't really. For me, the two big takeaways from this morning's keynote were, A, the Azure devices, the cheaper S40 devices that Nokia introduced today. They really showed that they have a firm grasp on emerging markets. You know, I'm from South Africa, so I obviously sat up and paid attention to those announcements. I think these Azure devices are going to do well. They come in at a really low price point. Plus, you get Angry Birds on S40 now, which is
something. A litmus test for any phone, right?
Oh, man. I wanted to ask the Rovio guys what kind of effort went into getting Angry Birds on S40, but I didn't get a chance to go there. But so that was the one thing, was the Azure devices, which I think are pretty astute take on emerging markets. But then there was also the marketing campaign for Lumia. Nokia showed us some of the television adverts that they're going to be running, some of the in-store stuff they're going to be doing. And it's clear that Microsoft is throwing a hell of a lot of money at marketing Nokia's first Windows phone. So I asked Nokia guys about it. You know, how much money is Microsoft spending on helping you out with marketing? They obviously wouldn't give me figures, but they said it is substantial. And so those were the two big pieces of news for me today, where A, Microsoft is betting a lot on this, and B, these Azure devices in emerging markets are going to be a big deal for Nokia.
Yeah, I'm more excited about the Azure devices simply because that's the revival, well, not even revival, but the elevation, I guess I'd say, of S40. Series 40, for people who don't know, is a feature phone operating system. It's sort of seen as below Symbian, but with these phones, it's sort of raising it into the feature smartphone hybrid situation. The 200 and the 201 are the smaller of the phones. They'll ship by the end of the year. They both have loudspeakers, and they run only €60, so they're incredibly inexpensive. The most inexpensive phone Nokia's ever made, actually. Then the 300 and the 303 are a little more elevated. The 300 is a candy bar phone with a numeric keypad, but it has a touchscreen and a 1 gigahertz processor in there. Only €85. That's $120. The 303 has a QWERTY keyboard, as well as the touchscreen, the 1 gigahertz processor, and they're both HSPA. The 303 is €115, so it's starting to get a little more expensive. But these are the kind of phones that will sell like hotcakes in South Africa?
I think so, Tom. I mean, South Africa is a crazy market. It's kind of a hybrid between some very first world segments and some very third worlds. But, you know, Nokia used the examples today of India and Kenya and other developing parts of the world. And I think these devices are going to be snapped up there. For example, there's a dual SIM option on one of these S40 devices. Now, dual SIM in countries like Kenya and Nigeria is a big deal. People want that. So, you know, Nokia delivering that kind of thing that, you know, for the US and European markets, people are going to go, why the hell would you want that? But, you know, it's the kind of thing you have to have for emerging markets. Bringing in the aspirational elements, they talk about QWERTY keyboards, how those are viewed very differently in the developing world to elsewhere, integrating that with touch. As you said, raising the application standard on S40, making them more like smartphones. I think it's a smart move. You know, we see a lot of very cheap devices that are kind of developed for emerging markets. They're usually pretty fly by night. The vendors' names kind of disappear from your memory instantly. They're flimsy devices. They're cheap. They've kind of just been thrown together to make some money out of emerging markets. Whereas a Nokia or a BlackBerry, those are more aspirational brands in these markets. And so I think to get those price points down to the level where you can compete with the cheaper devices that are flowing in from China, but give somebody a Nokia, give them Angry Birds, a pretty solid application platform and all the other bits and pieces. It makes a lot of sense to me.
First, these are made of polycarbonate, and apparently they look gorgeous, even though they're cheap polycarbonate. And they come with a Nokia browser that compresses the data. So if you're on a restricted data plan, it's not going to eat up all your minutes.
And when I first saw
it, was saying compression up to 90%. Which is crazy, right?
Yeah. I want to see that happen in the real world.
Well, and you'll never lose that lime green 303.
Wow. Those look shockingly like a Pixie, don't they? The Palm Pixies?
I actually kind of like it.
I first saw that, look like a Pixie. That Nokia was going ahead and still do some feature phones. I mean, originally I was taken aback by it, and all the points Simon made were really valid. And the other thing was, I remember Nokia's financials. They were talking about how they shipped a ton of these feature phones, and this keeps them afloat while they're still trying to find their ground in the smartphone.
Yeah, this is where they make their money right now. This is why Nokia is still the number one handset manufacturer, is because of these kind of phones.
This will definitely keep them going so they can continue with their Windows Phone experiment, as because this generation doesn't look so hot.
I want to get to the Nokia Kinetic device before we finish up with Nokia. But before I do, you mentioned dual SIM, and I don't think a lot of people in our audience maybe know what that is. Dual SIM allows you to have two SIM cards from two different manufacturer or two different service providers, right? I know this is, like you mentioned, it's big in Kenya. It's also big in India. Explain why that is such an advantage.
Yeah. So it depends on which market you're talking about. I spoke to a Nigerian journalist once who explained to me that in the early days of telecoms in Nigeria, they didn't have interconnect agreements between some of the cellular networks. So if you were on one cellular network, you couldn't phone your friend on another, for example. That's no longer the case. But in markets like Kenya, for example, we're seeing the whole dual SIM phenomena. And one prong of that is cost. So a lot of networks will run promotions where they have discounted calling rates over the weekends, for example. So you'll keep that SIM card for calling over the weekends. You'll have another SIM card that you use during the week, and there you'll capitalize on specials that another network may have during office hours, for example. The other thing is, in markets where the developing world has kind of leapfrogged fixed line telecoms, guys would have one SIM card for work maybe and one that they use for their friends. So they'll have a business line and they need that SIM card to be active so that they can receive business calls on that number, but they don't want to use the same number for their social lives, for example.
And you just switch them in the interface, right? That's the nice thing, is you don't have to pop SIM cards in and out.
Right, so with these new with the new Nokia, it's the 200, right? The dual SIM.
Yeah.
You basically dial a number and it asks you which SIM would you like to make the call on, and you select the operator that you'd like to call out on or the number you'd like to call out on, and when somebody calls you, it makes it clear which line they're calling you on. So it's pretty simple.
Yeah, that's great. Easy swap is what Nokia calls it, but it's dual SIM sort of situation. Did you get a chance to look at the Nokia Kinetic device? This is a bendable interface where you kind of squeeze the thing to change what goes on the screen, and you can like bend a corner to click.
Zoom.
Yeah.
I unfortunately didn't get to play with it myself. I saw some of the other guys messing around with it. It's interesting. I was trying to think, like, you know, in what situation would I need this? I can't really think of much. Some of the motion stuff was kind of interesting, but it's early days for this kind of technology. Unfortunately, I couldn't get my hands on it. You know, obviously it caused quite a stir and there were a lot of people queuing up to play around with it. But definitely interesting technology. And one of the things that struck me was the image quality on the screen was fantastic.
Now, this is not the first time we've heard about this. In fact, Ayaz has tried to get this in our randomizer
segment
a couple times, and we shot him down every time.
There was a remote control where you could change channels and volumes using this flexible display concept or flexible controller. But I could see the phone usage in this, because a lot of things that people forget about with touchscreen phones is that they aren't super accessible for the visually impaired. If you have a phone like this, if you want to actually control it, just twist it to make something change, as opposed to trying to find a scroll bar or an up-down arrow or any of those things. This, something like this could be very useful for somebody who can't see very well.
Well, also, we talked about how these sorts of things could be extremely portable. You roll them up, you put in your back pocket type of a thing. So it's like, if it's the sort of thing that can bend, why not incorporate that bending quality when you're using it, so that you don't have to then flatten it out and use it as if it wasn't bendable? It's awesome.
Yep. Cool looking stuff. Let's move on from Nokia World, talk about RIM. UK and Ireland Managing Director Stephen Bates told Mobile News Online in an interview, "We have an unprecedented track record of reliability." In fact, he estimated the UK BlackBerry service uptime was 99.97% over the last 18 months.
Which is very good uptime.
It is very good. Well, it's only three nines.
They only missed 3 days. That's it.
Like 18 months.
You kind of want 4 or 5 nines. No, seriously. Like, that's... I don't know if that's that much to brag about. He did, to be fair, though, in the same interview, he did cop to the problems that they had when they were down for around 3 days and said, hey, you know what? We messed up, and this is how we learn, and we want all of the media attention, and we want all the negative feedback, because we want to not make these mistakes anymore. Also, late yesterday, RIM confirmed a rumor that the Playbook OS 2 that everyone had been expecting would bring email apps, along with a few other features like enterprise apps, will not be coming until February. David Smith, a senior vice president for the Playbook, wrote on the blog, "As much as we'd love to have it in your hands today, we've made the difficult decision to wait to launch BlackBerry Playbook OS 2.0 until we are confident we have fully met the expectations of our developers, enterprise customers, and end users. On top of that, Playbook OS 2.0 won't incorporate BlackBerry Messenger, so you'll have an even longer wait for that." Do you use RIM, Simon, or are you on somebody else, some other manufacturer?
I have a BlackBerry device and I have a Playbook, and you know, I kind of keep my eyes on everything that's happening. I kind of looked at the news coming out of RIM today, having just spoken to Nokia, and you know, say what you want about the new Nokia devices. They've got a direction, they've got firm timelines, they've got their marketing strategy together. You know, looking at Nokia as a recovering wounded animal in the mobile phone market compared to RIM, it's just RIM is all over the place, man. It's like I can't make head or tail of where they're coming from. They're indecisive. They keep shifting the posts. I just don't know what they're up to.
Tom,
I don't think they know what
they're
up to.
When did you get the Playbook into your hands?
The day it came out. Yeah.
But when was that? Like, it was
July? Earlier this year. Yeah, I think late spring.
So, and it was disappointing that there wasn't email or messaging capabilities, and for it not to be available till February. Or, you know, and even without the messaging.
The BlackBerry Messenger thing is not that big a deal because you have to have a BlackBerry phone to be using it now. And then you can tether it. The email thing is a mild annoyance. You can still get email. You just have to have a web interface for your email. So it's not that great for enterprise, which is where RIM is supposed to be playing well. I agree with Simon. It's a confusing strategy. They seem to want to stick to their guns, but they don't know where their guns are.
You know what really frustrates me is QNX is a beautiful platform. I love the user interface. I think it's the best user interface we've seen on a tablet device so far. It's really elegant. It's really slick and fast. And it works
it's beautiful. So well, yeah.
Yeah, and you want to use it, but there are no apps available. I mean, Evernote is finally available for Playbook, but what else is there? It's so frustrating to see such a graceful platform just, you know, kind of wasting away because there's no applications. There's nothing to do with it except browse the web.
There's even more bad news. Virgil in the chat room sent us a link telling us about RIM facing a potential class action suit about the BlackBerry outage. So it just gets worse and worse and worse right now.
Wow. I have to actually wipe the dust off my Playbook. Sadly.
Left to right. That's why the dust off. Left to
right. Yeah.
I can see you were trying to forget when I asked you when you got that Playbook. You're like, I don't know, earlier this year.
I don't know. It's a sad memory, Sarah.
Back in the cottage days, I think. I remember
something so painful.
It's a lovely piece of hardware, and Simon's totally right. The interface works great. The multitasking is incredible. The QNX operating system, or BBX, whatever they ended up allowing to call it, is fantastic, but they just have not implemented it right. They needed to have the software on board to make it
work. Well, for them to say we're not ready, you know, we owe it to the developer community to wait a little bit longer.
Maybe they should have done that the first time.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break and thank our newest sponsor, Epson. If you watched yesterday's show, you know we've got the Epson.
Yeah, we got a special delivery
right here on the set.
It's really big.
I've got the notes that I'm supposed to talk about on my phone here, but it's kind of small. I think I'll just print those out.
Because your eyes are bad.
I could read that.
And zooming. The contrast ratio on a phone versus so paper. It's not even close.
Yeah, it's going to hurt my eyes if I try to read
this. Sometimes you just want it on paper.
Exactly.
Am I right?
So if you're in a workplace and you need a fast two-sided inkjet printer, Epson engineered the Workforce Pro for productivity. It delivers high-speed, automatic, two-sided color printing, copying, scanning, and faxing. And the network system is so amazing.
Wow. That was less than 30 seconds.
From my phone.
And that was asleep.
Through the Wi-Fi network. That was asleep, so I had to wake up. You're right. And I've got the points here. Ink cartridges have extra high capacity. Gives you 50% less cost per page versus color laser. Plus 580 sheet paper capacity means you load the paper less often. That's nice. Check it out at Epson.com. Epson is built to perform, to keep your business running at full speed. So anybody can print to this, as we will probably find out if anyone hears me say that. Because if you're on the same network, at the same workplace, you don't have to run a bunch of wires and deal with a bunch of network problems. It works amazing. I didn't even use the Epson app to do that. I was in Simple Note on my phone, and I just pressed print, and I picked that printer. There you go. Epson. Check them out. Epson.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Sprint had their earnings. Sprint always does this. They do their earnings before the market, which I always find odd. And I think they would have rather not done their earnings. Operating revenues of $8.3 billion is about 2% higher than Q3 2010, but they had a net loss of $301 million, so they're still bleeding money. They did increase subscribers. Net wireless net subscribers reached a five-year high, 1.3 million customers hopping on board, but they lost about 44,000 postpaid. Postpaid means the people who sign up for the two-year contracts. That's where you get most of your money. They're raising subscribers in prepaid phones and in wholesale phones. They do expect more loyalty and bigger profits from customers who choose the iPhone. iPhone was their best launch ever for any device on Sprint. And even though it's costing them an arm and a leg to get it, in fact, they're not going to make money on it for a couple of years. Dan Hess, CEO of Sprint, said lifetime value for the iPhone customer will be at least 50% greater than a typical smartphone user. So they're hoping it all pays off.
He also said something curious, though. It didn't make any sense to me that iPhone users use significantly less data than other users on their network. And I thought, how would that possibly be true?
Well, they have all those Android phones out there, and they have, what, the 4G hotspots?
So what is he saying? Android phones are data hogs?
Possibly. I mean, the thing was, wasn't one of the old problems with Android was that a lot of apps would be running in the background and people didn't have a task managers to kill them. And so they would be using data constantly.
Simon, have you ever heard of that the iPhone uses less data than other smartphones?
Oh, definitely. I've seen it myself. Android is a data hog. Not that the iPhone isn't. It's just not as bad as Android. Mm.
And I feel like I have this vague recollection that we've covered a story sometime in the past, like 3 or 4 months, that was specifically about this, about the fact that Android phones tend to use more data than iPhone.
So Sprint is banking on that. They're like, you know what? This will ease up our network.
Right.
To get the iPhone.
And I think I see why they actually released the information while the market was open. Their stock price is at $2.50. It's $2.51.
So they don't care.
They don't care. They're just going for broke. Like, all right, you know what?
Literally. In addition to LightSquared, they're also reaching an agreement with Clearwire on their LTE rollout. Remember, they're switching in the next couple of years from WiMAX to LTE. They did clarify that they'll be supporting WiMAX for a long time if you have a WiMAX device, but they are going to switch over to LTE and hopefully have a wholesale deal with Clearwire like they have with LightSquared. So that did two things. Once, it shored up the LTE rollout for Sprint. They've got a couple of people helping roll it out. And it answered some questions about Clearwire, because if Sprint was moving off WiMAX, what was Clearwire going to do? Because Clearwire was the WiMAX provider for Sprint.
And Clearwire's stock had a nice flutter up.
Which Sprint owns a lot of, right? They're like the majority owner of Clearwire. So
yeah, it's almost like it's the
same
thing.
They took a hit one area and they brought their money
to
back.
Not be profitable on the iPhone until 2015. I mean, it's a big investment. Sure. That's a few years from now.
They want to survive. I mean, that's the big thing, right?
It's like they don't really have a choice. You have to go iPhone.
And their agreement with Apple apparently runs through 2015. Apple also in the news today. They've been awarded a patent on Slide to Unlock. This is the second awarding of a patent on Slide to Unlock used in iOS devices. This is similar to a patent that was dismissed in Europe due to prior art earlier this year. But they've added some language to make it a little tighter. Ayaz, what's going on with these patents?
Okay, well, let me explain what the patent is in the first place. All right, so it's very particular. So before everyone freaks out about Android running into issues, it's actually about the device being unlocked if the contact with the display corresponds to a predefined gesture for unlocking the device. The device displays one or more unlock images with respect to which the predefined gestures are to be performed. So the idea is when you use an iPhone, you see there's a little bar already there.
Yeah.
You move one little item from to the left to the right. Now, when you have an Android phone, and actually that's before I get to the Android part, that's all this patent covers. I read this thing, and it looks like it's just about a predefined path moving something from A to B. So if you use an iPhone, again, you go like this, right? It's really simple. Where is it? Right there. Now, if Android wants to get around this, I'm thinking the first person who has a problem is Samsung, because they have that puzzle piece interface, because it's a corresponding item, because it could be not necessarily the
path. Right, because it doesn't have to be parallel. Right, it could be diagonal.
Exactly.
It could be a monkey. It just has to be a thing that you move.
Right, so what could happen is if Android wanted to get around this right away, the first thing that would happen when you open an Android phone or turn it on, it would tell you predefine something now. You can have your own gesture, because what the iPhone or the Apple patent is about a predefined path, which is left to right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're saying what if it
was dot dot, like two diagonal dots that didn't actually slide?
I think it's not a slide. That's just two points.
Different.
Yeah, right.
That's already different. So the thing is, it's really easy to work around at this point because it's very limited. Because this is going to sound like pro-patent arguments, but the thing is, because somebody had to think about this and they had to distill it down to words and explain how this actually works going in a predefined path, that makes it really easy to work around because you go, what's a predefined path? Mm-hmm. What if I don't even tell you? What if I say, Tom, make whatever shape you want on this thing when you start up your phone, that'll be your unlock. It could even be a passcode and that would be fine. So that one isn't so scary. But PC Mag actually noted a, I think, a much more dangerous patent that Microsoft actually applied for, which I need to get the text about.
Well, before we get to that, though, I just want to point out that the Dutch judge said that this U.S. a earlier slide to unlock patent from Apple was invalid because the slide to lock gesture had been seen before in a Neo Node Windows CE based phone.
Right, but I think that's a different patent. It wasn't this exact one?
Right,
that's
right.
The thing.
So they added some language to this patent.
Right.
That clarifies.
If you look at the Neo Node video, that's on all the posts everywhere. There are defined gestures, but the screen itself doesn't show you what to do.
Mm. Right.
It doesn't it's like people just flicking. So if you go to the 4-minute mark, you'll see it. And this person hits unlock. Now, they're sliding to unlock, but there's no... It's not exactly the same. I know that seems...
The new patent says there needs to be sensory feedback to the user regarding progress towards satisfaction of a user.
So when you
input.
Move left to right, it goes click.
So it says, simple you know what, thing. that's not the same thing.
Well, from what you're explaining then, it sounds like ice cream sandwiches change of lock screen is going to... be the workaround.
That's the workaround right there. Yeah. Very easy one. This one's even scarier. This is the Microsoft one. The method extracts a template or edge orientation pattern from an initial sketch of the user and an input edge orientation pattern from input sketch of the user, compares the similarity between the two edge orientation patterns. So the idea is your user-defined thing could be patented by Microsoft. Now, this right here is simply a patent application that was filed on the 20th of September. This hasn't been granted. But the idea that a sketch-based password would be owned by Microsoft, which could impact Android, and we've seen how Microsoft goes after Android. Okay. This seems like it'd be pretty simple, pretty open and shut there, assuming they even get the patent approved.
All right, let's finish up with our new Power Plays segment.
You know, I really don't have a...
You don't have a Power Plays open?
We have power...
Oh, that'll work.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's like
Iron Man. Does that work?
Except we went into the slide to unlock patent. Oops. But, yeah, it's coming. Now we're going to do another patent.
Here, I'll go back to you and figure out what I'm doing.
So we've got two stories here. One,
Power Play to rule them all.
Charlotte Observer reports that Apple has been issued permits necessary to build a huge server farm or huge solar farm next to their huge server farm in Catawba County, North Carolina. They call it Project Dolphin, Solar Farm A, expanded, because the original server farm is called Project Dolphin. So they're continuing to be committed to green energy. Meanwhile, The Telegraph reports Facebook will build a multi-million mini-town 62 miles south of the Arctic Circle to house its computer servers. It's the first time Facebook has built a server farm outside the U.S. It'll be in Luleå, northern Sweden, which has an average temperature of 2 degrees Celsius year-round.
At first, I was
35.6 Fahrenheit.
Wow, does anyone even live there? It's up in the Arctic Circle, but it's like 45,000 people.
Yeah, it's not even that tiny of a town.
They probably got great food, entertainment.
They say they never
people
go...
People on Facebook are going to be begging to move to Sweden.
They never go above like 14 degrees Celsius for more than 24 hours at any point in the year.
So wait, if they want to cool off the servers, they just open a window?
They're air-cooled.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mats Engram, chief executive of the Aurorum Science Park, which is leading the push to turn Luleå into the north or the node pole, as they call it, says, yeah, you can air cool your servers, cuts down on power. It'll still draw 120 megawatts of power, but local hydroelectric power runs with a 50% surplus. So they got plenty of power to spare.
The next Silicon Valley. A lot of startups going on in the node pool. Mark my words.
Silicon Glacier. None of you have ever been to Luleå, Sweden, I'm guessing.
I've never even been to Sweden.
Not that I'm aware of.
Have you ever been to Sweden, Simon?
No, I'm going to Stockholm next month, speaking at a conference over there.
But, well, you should take a trip up to the tip of the Baltic and visit Luleå.
Tell us all about the node pole.
I will do so.
All right. Go to the node pole. Maybe you can be the first to have a t-shirt that says node pole on it. Be the envy of all your geek friends. All right, let's take a trip down the news fuse. Love that theme. Some of you may have noticed Twitter looked different to you. I has noticed this a couple days ago, actually. Twitter is testing a redesign that allows you to expand tweets and view videos within the timeline by clicking a new open button. So instead of an expansion happening in the right pane, the expansion occurs in the timeline itself. Commands for favorites, retweets, and reply have also moved to the top of each tweet if you're seeing that redesign. You may not be seeing it, but that's what
the thing is. And if you see the redesign, it may be gone the next time you log in.
I get so jealous when I hear about this stuff, and I'm like, why is Iyad seeing the redesign and I am not?
I just assumed everyone had seen it already.
Of course you did.
I could have broken the story.
Speaking of Sweden, blogtoppen.se, a Swedish blog portal, said that about 90,000 of its users' data are public, including account information of journalists and politicians. Newspaper Aftonbladet reports that another 57 sites and 180,000 users are at risk. A hacker by the handle SC3A5J claims that he perpetrated the attack to show how unsafe users' information are. So I guess that was successful. This is the largest security breach in Sweden history, and the Stockholm police are investigating.
So maybe you can help with the investigation when you go to Stockholm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I will certainly try and do that.
You're
going
to be busy visiting Lulea, investigating.
Yeah, getting t-shirts made.
Yeah.
Giving that hacker trip. A talking to.
A stern talking to. A blog post on the Kaspersky Labs threat post shed some light on the Dooku malware. Unlike Stuxnet, Dooku is limited to an extremely small number of targets and has been found in Iran and Sudan. Kaspersky cited the work of Hungarian research lab Crisis for the analysis. Dooku's sophistication suggests that it's not the work of script kiddies this time. It's probably a state actor. And that's the opinion of Security Now's Steve Gibson.
Software security company ESET found new OS X malware in the wild called OS X Tsunami. Takes over your computer, receives commands via IRC to DDoS sites, or have remote users download files. The malware is actually a port of the Linux Tsunami Trojan horse. So everyone's in on the party with this one. OS X users, your best bet is to be careful what you download and keep your system up to date. Just the normal security practices you should be following every day.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the Yahoo board of directors are ready for a permanent CEO. Last month, Yahoo fired Carol Bartz and installed CFO Tim Morse in the position on an interim basis. Wall Street Journal's source said that Yahoo's original plan was to seek a sale, but now the board thinks, we need a permanent CEO. That's necessary for direction in case of no sale.
Yahoo wants direction in case of,
They want it all.
That's just in from the chat room. It's pronounced Lulio.
What is it? I thought it was pronounced it's, but that's me. CNET reports that Coldplay's latest album, Milo Xyloto, will not be available for streaming on services like Spotify, RDO, and Rhapsody. Coldplay's label, EMI, said, quote, "We always work with our artists and management on a case-by-case basis," which absolutely suggests that Coldplay made the call. CNET's sources say that Coldplay wants the entire album heard as a whole and not broken up into singles. That's also an odd argument, considering individual album tracks are available on iTunes. So
basically, you can get it on iTunes.
Yep.
It's so. The integrity of the music, man.
Except that you can buy individual tracks on iTunes. So
oh, no, that's
argument?
Actually against the DMCA. to play the tracks individually, if you listen to the new Coldplay album, you have to listen from beginning to end without stop. Otherwise, don't start playing it. That's the law.
Just passed.
Citing two people familiar with the matter, Bloomberg reports HP will start offering servers that use ARM chips made by Texas-based Calxeda, which is partly owned by ARM. Officially, neither company have commented about the situation. HP already ruffled Microsoft's feathers by going with WebOS for its consumer tablet back a while ago. So irritating Intel, why not? Put that on the to-do list as well.
LG has reported its Q3 financials and it's not good. The handset unit reported a loss of $124 million, which is its sixth consecutive quarter with a loss. As a whole, LG reported an operating loss of about $28 million. They tried to soften the news by saying they expect to have improved earnings in the next quarter. Won't be an unlucky seven. Just we'll stop
next
at
quarter.
Six.
It'll
next
be quarter is tomorrow. Gonna get better. Oh, is it tomorrow?
Yes.
There's
a
new day away.
There's a new version of Firefox, and it's called Firefox with Bing, and guess what it does?
What?
It uses Bing as a default search engine in the awesome bar, the search bar, and the home screen.
Heresy. No. Firefox with Bing?
Well, hang on. This version doesn't replace the standard Firefox, which uses Google as its default search. Like, when you go to get Firefox, you'll get the Google version. You have to look out for the Bing one. Just another option out there. Firefox makes the vast majority of its money with search providers, so maybe Microsoft's giving them a little kick.
It's a little diversification.
Remember
there.
When you did your 30-day Bing project?
Yes.
You should do a 30-day Firefox with Bing project.
Oh, I can't handle the tab management. I tried. I did a one-day Firefox project because I loved Firefox.
I did too.
And I went back to it for a day, and it was the tabs. The tab management was just so snappy in Chrome.
I know.
Even though everything else is awful and it crashes all the time. The tab management is like crack. I can't quit you, tab management. Firefox is a thing.
He wishes he knew how.
Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
A man has built a smartphone dock into his arm.
No, why would he do such a thing?
Wait, his arm?
Because he has a prosthetic.
What's in the arm?
Trevor Prideau has a prosthetic limb and was having problems with his Nokia C7 because every time he tried to use it for text, he's trying to balance it on his other arm. So he built a dock into the arm.
Clearly,
so
the problem was with the phone.
Clearly, it just didn't work. With his prosthetic arm. So now it does, actually. He's got a fiberglass limb with a cradle for the C7, and he can just hold up his forearm and use it. It's actually more convenient than people who have a normal limb in some ways.
Absolutely.
You know, the chat room's got this. It's an arm-powered arm.
Oh, good one.
It likely is.
It probably would be. Wow. I don't know what's in the C7, but it could be Snapdragon-powered arm.
Well, if he gets another... Is an arm actually a snapdragon?
I guess that it's still
technically
arm,
an architecture.
Yeah.
Then when you take a shower, the whole thing comes off, obviously.
Or not.
Well, you could just pop the phone out.
I guess that's
out.
True.
Yeah.
Huh. What if you want one.
Darn
now,
innovative,
now he needs
though.
To build in some, like, rechargeability for when he walks around.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Phone charged. There you go.
He just needs...
A solar arm.
He needs a little more of a Popeye type of arm, and he can build an iPad in, and then he can watch Slingbox.
He wouldn't need such
that a... That is true. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes around.
Happens to be that our show is brought to you by Slingbox.
So strange.
That's so weird.
Just in time for the holidays, Slingbox has the iPad app. You can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. This has saved my World Series watching recently several times, being able to get my home television over the internet, wherever I have an internet connection, without having to be blacked out. I can watch it. I'm already paying for it. I should be able to watch it where I want. That's what Slingbox lets you do. You plug it in to the internet connection. You plug it into your television connection. And then on your smartphone, on your tablet, on your laptop, you can watch all of your television in any room of the house. Find a demo at Best Buy or check it out at slingbox.com/twit. Slingbox in your home TV, appearing on iPads everywhere. Calendar?
Windows XP. Guess how old it is? It's 10 years old.
It's like 10 years old.
It's like one of those old workaholic dudes who have to be forced into retirement, kicking and screaming, no, I can still work. You can't work that well, but
I can still work. You know what happens a lot of times. This has been medical studies have shown when you force people into early retirement like that, they end up dying. And Microsoft said they're going to stop supporting Windows XP soon.
Oh, no. Well, you're 10. You made a solid 10 years, Windows XP. Google rolled out version 15 of Chrome to its stable channel. It's not a huge update. Some minor cosmetic changes like a new tab page and a cleaner-looking Chrome store. The Droid Razr pre-orders go live on Verizon tomorrow, October 27th. They'll ship before November 10th. Anybody wants to pay $300 on the contract price. No word yet on in-store launch dates. There's a grand opening party this Saturday, the 29th, if you're in the L.A. area, at the Klein Rock Internet Heritage Site on the UCLA campus. This is a historical reconstruction of the lab where the internet was born in 1969. Sort of a birthday party. Starts at 1 p.m. Drink, snacks, internet pioneers to gawk at. Why wouldn't you want to go?
Windows XP is going to show up so it feels young.
In internet years, Next Wednesday, November 2nd at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, PBS is going to air a one-hour special called One Last Thing on the life and career of Steve Jobs that features interviews and footage with Jobs himself along with anecdotes from those who knew him. We were talking a little bit before the show, like, we all going to watch this?
No.
We feel like we've seen a lot of...
I'm kind
of
done.
A lot of specials and read a lot of books. Mm. Yeah. Just in time for the holidays, Nintendo DSi XL bundles are arriving on November 6th. $170 for each package deal includes Mario versus Donkey Kong Miniland Mayhem. And finally, the Tango video calling service for Windows Phone Mango is rolling out Monday, November 7th.
Cool. Let's check what's incoming.
Doop, doop, doop.
Let's do it right now.
Ah.
And then let's quickly go to a voicemail. I'm messing with Jason now. We do have a voicemail, though. It's about Amazon earnings, and this person feels like it is time to panic.
Hey, TNT crew. Regarding the Amazon Q3 earnings, the reason investors are freaking out is that this is the second big miss in a row for Amazon on earnings. And it's even bigger than the analysts expected, because at Q2, Amazon predicted that they would fall short of analysts' expectations for Q3. So, you know, the fact that they're doing bad and doing even worse than what they had predicted they would do is why people are freaking out. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
So that puts it in a little perspective. Financially, Amazon's mm-hmm. missed a couple quarters. I still think they're doing fine, personally.
Yeah.
But
I think they're headed for a really great next quarter.
What is the perception of Amazon in South Africa, Simon? I mean, are they even thought of at all?
Yeah, definitely. They don't ship from South Africa to South Africa. We can order from Amazon UK and they'll ship to South Africa. .com will do selected goods from North America to South Africa. They have a massive call center operation in Cape Town. Have about 1,200 people doing Kindle support from South Africa. They got people working for Amazon in South Africa, but not shipping stuff too. So, you know, we'd like to see more of Amazon, their web services, and especially their content play. We're a little bit neglected when it comes to, you know, digital content. But, we think they're cool. We like the Kindle.
You want to see them not fall apart? Yeah. All right. Finally, an email from Habichuela Condolce, who I could not pronounce yesterday, but said, just wanted to give you props for trying to pronounce Habichuela Condolce. It's a sweet bean liquid dessert from the Dominican Republic that is especially popular around the Easter holiday. You can visit Wikipedia, look it up there, and there's some recipes at DominicanCooking.com. Might sound like some kind of crazy dessert, but if you ask someone from Latin America, the Caribbean, especially someone from Dominican Republic, they'll say it's great. Thanks again. I enjoyed the show. Just passing some info in case you guys would like to try it. I totally want to try it.
Absolutely. Maybe we can have Dolce Friday.
You know, it was the inner capping that always throws me off on the Reddit. Abituela con Dolce.
Oh, that was the username. I was like, when did you say this?
I'm saying it like Italy. But yeah, it was somebody's username on Reddit yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. So thanks for that, and now I'm hungry.
Dulce.
And I want to eat a sweet bean liquid dessert. Because you know what, this reminds me of Hopia from the Philippines, where they have sweet bean filling inside a bun.
Also sounds good. Let's do that.
Let's do all of that and more. Do you have a dessert, Simon, that you would like to throw into the mix before we wrap up?
None that I can think of right now.
All right. Yeah, too many desserts anyway.
Ice cream sandwich, and then there's...
exactly. Well, thanks to the folks on Reddit. Tom Merritt's Beard, Gord McLeod, Cy Spud, Jester Six, Captain Kipker, The Moke, all kinds of folks in there submitting stories, and 3,064 people voting them up or down helps us figure out what to cover each day. We do thank you for that. Go check it out, technewstoday.reddit.com. And thank you, Simon, for reporting from Nokia World. Couldn't have done it without you. Great perspective. And let folks know where they can find what you do online.
Yeah, simondingle.com, at Simon Dingle on Twitter. It was great hanging out with you guys. Thanks.
Excellent. That's it for us. We will be back tomorrow, but you can find us all the time at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call, leave us a message like the guy did today, 260-TNT-SHOW. That is our voicemail. Larry Dignan from ZDNet joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.